Welcome to an HBO podcast from the HBO Late Night series, Real Time with Bill Maher.
Here we are, we're back. We were going to get to Cuba, and we ran out of time, and I know you want to disagree with me, and you don't even know what I'm going to say.
Well, I want to hear what you have to say.
Well, I mean, I think I said it in the monologue. We have stood with worse dictators. I think Cuba in the Freedom Watch list is 62nd out of 177 countries, one being the worst.
Yeah.
So it's behind China, I think Iran, Egypt, which is not a great place to be, but it's ahead of a number of our allies like Bahrain and Saudi Arabia.
So I guess where I'm coming from is that the United States has all of the leverage in this situation. And if you're looking at what Raul Castro's plan is, I believe the plan is not to do what China and Vietnam have done, not to have a kind of, you know, basically move away from a socialist economy. I believe they're looking to Vladimir Putin. They're looking to, you know, Chavez's Venezuela. They want to have sham elections, and he wants to install his son or his son-in-law in power, and we're allowing that to happen. Now, we have all the leverage. I believe we should open up to Cuba, and I believe we should normalize relations, but we can demand a lot more because they're at the most vulnerable point.
This is what we're going on for 50 years.
No, it hasn't been going on, because what I'm saying is that actually we should open up, but we can now demand more from them in terms of how they treat their citizens and also having an open and competitive political process.
These things take time.
Of course it takes time.
It's weak.
But we're never going to have more leverage than we do right now.
They used to look to Russia and Venezuela for cash. For cash. Now they can't. They're 90 miles away from the world's largest economy. And if they open the door a little crack, we're going to overwhelm them.
And they're doing that.
I feel very comfortable that in 5 years' time, these guys are gone. 50 years of sanctions, get them there.
That's the fantasy.
Yeah, I totally agree. Look, I mean, he went. The president went, he looked at Raul Castro, he spoke to the Cuban people, he talked about democracy. I mean, that's the first time.
The Castro family, they're not idiots. They know what they're doing. They've given this a lot of thought. Okay. And if they believe that Ian was right, if they didn't, they have a plan B. That's my point. Their plan B is sham elections. In 2018, it's all ready to
go. But you know, we can't make everybody in the world do everything we want to do.
Of course we can.
Of course we can't make everyone do it. Oh, great.
Of course we can't, but the point is that why surrender all of your leverage when they're at their weakest point right now?
We're not surrendering all our leverage. We're trying
We're trying a different tactic
from the one that didn't work for 60 fucking years. What a crazy idea.
The tactic is we have one big carrot to offer, that is normalizing relationships and actually offering them the huge economic opportunities that
ending the embargo would be another big carrot.
Yeah.
But, yeah, we're not doing that, even though most Americans are for doing that.
Normalizing relations is a rather big thing, and having Starwood and having Airbnb sign deals and getting hard currency into the hands of the repressive apparatus of
Cuba. That's how their minds are going to change. Starwood's going to be there. They're going to meet Americans.
So that's worked in Putin's Russia. That's worked, that's going to work in Iran. I mean, that's going to work in all the other authoritarian countries where they figured out. They're smart, too, Bill. They are strategic, too. They've given this some thought, and they think that they're going to come out ahead. Okay. And I think they're probably right.
All right.
With that said, do any of you have a good cigar connect? Because I just started up.
This is the man to talk to.
What I care about more than.
What are the chances of delegates turning on Trump if there is a brokered convention in July? I think pretty good, right?
I think pretty good, too.
Yeah, I mean, it depends on who those delegates are.
They're working them now.
Yeah.
I mean, everybody on the other teams are working those
delegates.
Are
you a super delegate?
I'm not a superdelegate, and I wouldn't be on that side. But I know that they are working that.
No, for the Democrats.
No.
You're not a superdelegate?
I used to be when I was governor, but I'm not anymore.
Oh. Are you a delegate?
I'm not a delegate, no.
No, just watching
on TV?
I'm just
a regular citizen.
Wow. I'm very surprised. Will the new voter ID laws being introduced in key states across the country influence the outcome of the election? Fuck yes.
Yes.
Of course.
It like did in Arizona. Everybody who was watching that total fiasco. They went from 200 polling sites to 60 in a heavily Latino county. People had to wait in line for 5 hours.
Wouldn't it be great if the Supreme Court just once went, we got this wrong.
Well,
gutted the Voting Rights Act. We thought America was better than it was. And it turned out we could not have been more wrong. Is there any argument on the other side?
The problem is that when we talk about voter ID laws, you've got very different laws in different states. Some of those laws, Pennsylvania, for example, that's a really bad law. But then if you're looking at Rhode Island, you're looking at Tennessee, you're looking at other states, they're not all the same. So the problem is when we talk about voter ID laws, you're talking about a bunch of different provisions.
They're all for limiting.
21 states since 2000. 2010 have adopted more restrictive, make it more difficult to vote laws. 21 states have. This will be the first presidential election for 16 of those states. They're largely in the South. They're largely trying to affect minorities.
Two quick points. One is, this is a solution looking for a problem that doesn't exist. And anytime you're restricting votes, it's bad. But the unspoken truth that's happening in America, and the biggest disenfranchisement we've seen since we were fighting on the Edmund Pettus Bridge and others were fighting on the for voting rights, is the disenfranchisement that's going on of people who've been convicted of nonviolent drug offenses. We right now have a country where the drug war is not a war on drugs, it's a war on people, particularly poor people, particularly minorities. And so now you have a nation where you have swing states like Virginia and Florida, where one out of every five African Americans has lost their right to vote. And so we have this outrageous reality in this country right now where our prison population since 1980 has grown 500%, federal prison population 800%, more people in jail today for nonviolent drug offenses than all the people in jail for 1975, being locked up for doing things the last two presidents said they're doing, and now they're in a second-class citizenship, a caste system where they can't get jobs, they can't vote, they can't get Pell Grants, they can't get food stamps, they can't get housing, public housing. They've entered this caste system, and it's an affront to our democracy because basically what we're doing is millions of Americans, we're cutting them out, taking away their voice and their participation in our country. So
What he said.
Well, look, and you also have conservatives and liberals who are agreeing on this and who are seeking to reform this system.
Not a partisan issue. I'm partnering on legislation with everybody from allies from the Koch brothers to others trying to fight something, a system that's completely broken.
Absolutely.
One of the greatest tragedies going on in our country right now is that what we are doing to entire communities like the one that I've lived in for the last 20 years is we're devastating these communities, a chance for an African-American to be arrested. And by the way, no difference between blacks and whites for using drugs, no difference for dealing drugs, except for some studies show that young white men have a higher rate of dealing drugs than young blacks, but an African-American will get arrested for drug crimes about four times more than white.
And this actually might make communities more dangerous. That's the really scary thing, because if you want to be tough on crime, it turns out that actually using incarceration too much, you actually change the dynamics in these communities in ways that make them more dangerous for the people who live there, and that is really, really bad.
I used to deal drugs, did you?
I did not deal drugs.
Right there. Anecdotally. Did you ever deal drugs, Gerard?
What's that?
Did you ever deal drugs?
No, but back in my day, I was known as an excellent bagger.
You used to deal drugs?
Oh, in college, yes. Well, yes, yes. I was gonna say just pot, but that would be a lie. I mean, when I got out of college, it was just pot. But in college, it was whatever my dealer had.
So you would buy from your dealer, you were like a middleman. You'd buy from your dealer and you'd sell the
other. Oh, that's not very nice. I thought of myself as an entrepreneur. Middleman. It was the 70s, right.
But it still goes on today. Look, I went to Stanford and
that's
there was
how
a
I got through college, by the way.
Well, there's a lot of drug use going on.
Wait, you paid your way through college stealing drugs?
Yeah.
That's a
wow.
Yeah. Maybe I'm gangster now. Right.
For the record, still no. The answer's still no.
Why? Because I'm white?
Yeah, kind of. A little bit. No. No, you're gangster. Fine, Bill, you're gangster.
More gangster than you. Is Donald Trump, Ian Bremmer, off base in suggesting that the U.S. rethink its involvement in NATO? You know what? Let's ask a different question that's close to that. Trump said this week that he was not putting nuclear weapons off the table dealing with ISIS because we need to be unpredictable. You had me at Trump and nuclear weapons. I mean,
that's already unpredictable. I mean, it's true.
That's a crazy thing to say.
Well, I mean, I would say, number one, Trump's slogan is not make America great again. It's America first. And it's let's find everyone else to blame. Mexicans are going to come to rape our women. Japanese and Chinese are robbing us blind. The Europeans are taking advantage of our goodwill on security. Muslims are all going to blow us up. That's a problem, right? And we see that with NATO as well. But I have to say, at least from my perspective, I think the likelihood that Trump actually could win a general election, given the astonishing negatives he has among young, among women, among just normal Americans, is really, really low. And I know we're talking about it because we have to and it's entertaining, but I just don't
think it's more than entertaining. He could be the Republican nominee and probably will be. And by the way, in this country, the Republican can always win. You know, they always said, well, you know, the Republicans are losing minorities and they're losing women. Yeah, but they never tried a race war election.
Yeah.
They never, like, really roused up those people who, when you lift up the rock, you find out what's living in this country. And Obama got, like, 40-something percent of the white vote against Mitt Romney. Trump's going to get more.
And I think combine that with voter suppression laws.
He's 9 percentage points behind Romney among white voters. But what I will say,
Trump is?
Yes, in a general election, yeah. He's well behind Romney among white voters.
But he's
gained some and he loses others.
He's going to move to the middle. That's the problem.
Look,
this is important.
I don't think he will move to the middle.
No, I think
he doesn't know how to do that.
No, he's going to
He does not know how to adjust.
I think that...
He's who he is.
Who you're talking about, Ted.
No, I'm talking about Trump.
He doesn't know how to adjust either. No, no, Trump
No, Ted will know how to move to the middle, not Trump.
I disagree with you.
Trump will not. Trump knows only one speed. I'm the best.
No, he will say stuff that is appealing.
He's not obligated to be consistent. No one expects him to be.
Exactly right. 70% of women, for example, can't bear the thought of voting for Trump in a general election. All women. He's going to say, yes. But he's gonna try to figure that out. Remember, he's super smart. He went to Wharton. So he's going to try to figure out the language that makes him more palatable to groups. He's going to do that. And that's
what he might do is divide.
He's never done that.
What he might do is deliver a serious blow to the Republican Party for 10 years.
Maybe one time where he got more reasonable. He calculatedly said, you know what, I think I'm going
to
be...
He says that he doesn't want to see poor people out in the street. He wants to have health care for everyone. I mean, he said that, right?
No, actually,
he said the thing about trade, which is a Democratic position often, and he thinks that we should be creating jobs in America. He has said stuff that is appealing to my side of the aisle. And I think that he will, try to moderate.
But he's constitutionally incapable of not doing crazy when he's in front of a camera, right? That's the point.
Yeah, but we saw him read from a teleprompter. Right. We saw him at AIPAC reading from a teleprompter. We saw him being disciplined.
Right.
You know, it happened once, he can do it again.
He fucked it up anyway.
little thing he went off.
Can I tell you what's interesting about Trump? I've never seen white people scramble before. Like, I've never seen, like, white America really, like, confused and, like, what the fuck are we gonna do about this? It's very interesting. It's very intriguing. Like, Donald Trump to me is like white Hurricane Katrina. It's like, we didn't realize it was gonna be, the levees have broken, and everyone is panicking right now, and it's interesting to watch.
You live here too.
I live here too, but here's the thing.
Trust me, it's gonna be worse for you.
But
here's
the thing, I'm from the hood. I don't trust anybody. I think everybody's corrupt.
But you don't think it matters if Trump is or anybody?
No, of course it matters. I mean, it definitely matters. I'm just saying it's an intriguing thing to watch. Like, I mean, I think, you know, I've had a healthy mistrust of literally every candidate that's ever existed in my lifetime. So I'm like, yeah, he's in the pile with the others.
Including Obama?
With Obama, listen, we were all very excited. We were young, we were excited, we were very happy, you know? And until Corey runs, you know, we're just gonna hang up.
When is that gonna be?
I was about to chime in and say that these are the days where I'm gonna run, but not necessarily for something, more like from something.
but you're gonna give the white people a turn. And they're gonna fuck it up, and then you're gonna be like,
so
ready
you're gonna
go.
Be like, come on.
So,
Obama was pretty good. You miss him.
The first time I was on the show, you said that, hey, this Obama, if he gets this thing right, you remember this joke, don't you?
No.
Then they're gonna think that these black guys are good at this thing, like basketball. They're gonna. That was my introduction to the show, and here it is, 8 years later, and I'm still suffering through the same joke.
Okay. Thank you very much. We gotta go.
Catch all new episodes of Real Time with Bill Maher every Friday night at 10, or watch him anytime on HBO On Demand. For more information, log on to HBO.com.